Welcome to CFO 4.0, the future of finance. The CFO role is changing rapidly, moving from cost controller to strategic visionary. And with every change comes opportunity. We are here to help you take advantage of this transition, to win at work, drive your career forwards, and lead with confidence. Join Hannah Monroe, Managing Director of ITAS, a financial transformation consultancy, as she interviews key experts to give you real-world advice and guidance on how to transform your processes, people, and data. Welcome to CFO 4.0, the future of finance.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of CFO 4.0. As usual, I am your host, Hannah Monroe, and with me today is Leslie Thomas, the founder of the Money Confidence Academy. So welcome, Leslie. So nice to have you on the show.
Hi there, Hannah. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
So today we're going to talk about, you know, almost the psychology and how we make decisions and how we can, more importantly, how we make, can make better ones. But let's just start with a bit of myth busting. What are some of the, I guess, the common myths about how we think we actually make decisions, and what's some of the reality?
I think that we think we make decisions, that it's a head-based activity. So if you think back to the last big financial decision that you made, you probably think that you made it rationally, that you engaged your experience, that you looked at the data, that you took in all the hard facts. And of course, you did a little bit of that, but that's just it. It tends to be a smaller part. Emotion tends to be where we really make our decisions, particularly financial decisions. And that can be based on a whole load of things, but very often going directly back to our childhood and how our relationship with money actually started. So many of the myths that we have is we make decisions based on what's in front of us, the data, our experience of what's worked, what hasn't worked in the past. But very often what will come up is fear. Fear of, what if it doesn't work? What if this time it's different? What happens if I don't understand the data? What if I don't have enough data? You know, what's going on, you know, right now in the world with the geopolitical situation and oil prices spiking and cost of living going up, et cetera, et cetera. And we don't actually know if there's going to be a genuine point in time where things go back to what we perceive as normal. And we can quite naturally start to catastrophize a situation. So start to think about the worst case scenario rather than the best case scenario. And that worst case scenario can tend to be based on our fear and not on real judgment of how we can actually manage a situation. And when it comes to making decisions, all sorts of different things come into play. How will I be perceived if I make the wrong decision? What will happen if the decision that I make is not a sound decision? What will other people think of me? How will it look? How will it affect my career? How will it affect my business? And all of that gets thrown up, and we start getting into a situation where things start to get less clear. And we start to get scared to make a decision because all of the other things, it's like a domino effect that we knock one domino over, and then what is going to happen? So when we make decisions, it isn't just with our head. It's very much with our heart, with our emotions, but we don't tend to consider that element because it's seen as being a softer thing to bear in mind. Whereas what our head wants to do is to do much more of the analysis and make a decision just based on that. Whereas our emotions want us to really consider how it makes us feel, how it makes us look, and how we're going to be perceived as a result of that decision.
How do we because obviously how we think we make decisions is different. So how do, you know, as a CFO, you're making decisions potentially on a regular basis that could have a material impact on the business. How do you know whether that you're making a decision with your head or your emotions? Like, is there anything that we can look for to go and understand almost that self-awareness about how we're making decisions?
Absolutely. And it's by quite simply asking yourself that question. When I am making a decision about X, so when I'm making a decision to invest in bringing new people into the team, what is that decision based on? Is it based on purely a financial need, or am I actually considering other things as well? Am I being very, very level-headed about it, or am I remembering that last member that I brought in that was very disruptive, that didn't work particularly well, that upset the team dynamics, that didn't actually perform in the way that I wanted them to perform? And therefore, am I actually leaning away from bringing on somebody else because of that experience? Or am I thinking, well, hang on, we can't grow this particular part of the business with the number of people we have at the moment. Therefore, we have to bring somebody else in. So you're separating the two things. And it can be very, very difficult to separate those two things if the problem created by that previous decision you're still hanging on to from a personal perspective, rather than thinking, okay, that didn't work as well as we wanted it to last time, but we understand the reasons why it didn't work, and this time we can do it differently.
I guess, you know, you talked about the view of perception and how it makes you feel, as it were, and how it makes you perceived. You know, how do you balance that piece, you know, that view of, you know, perception, where you know you may need to make a difficult decision, but perhaps how you might be perceived by different parts of the organization because of it. How do we take that? Because we, you know, I think as humans, we're engineered to want to be liked and to want to fit in. It's part of our biology. So how do we disassociate, I guess, how we might be perceived or how people are going to feel about us from the decision?
Absolutely. And I think when you are a CFO, you know, a lot of responsibility is automatically placed on your shoulders because of that role that you're playing, but also because of other people's perception of you as the leader. You know, very often people are great at being second in command, but they automatically want somebody else to be leading the way and taking them through a difficult decision, a difficult situation going on in a company. And very often, you know, that person is the CFO. The best CFOs I have worked with have real awareness of where they have had to detach their emotion from the decision that they have to make, but more importantly, their identity. Because very often we have a public-facing identity. I want to be perceived as the person that can lead everybody through a storm, that always makes the right decision, isn't concerned about, you know, upsetting anybody, because I am here to lead the way. Whereas the best CFOs and the best leaders I have worked with have recognized that there is always going to be tension between your true identity and the identity that you are wearing for the role that you are performing. Because most of us perform in a role. You know, we are not a CFO. That just happens to be the job that we are doing. But we recognize that sometimes to make those hard decisions, the identity that we have to wear for that decision is based on the greater good of the organization. So, for example, it could be that the CFO has somebody in their leadership team that they have worked with for many, many years. They came into the organization together. They were step in step, you know, as promotions happened, etc. They supported each other. They performed different functions, but they supported each other. But the CFO has started having people coming to them and saying that particular person is no longer performing well in that role. And they are starting to let things drop. Other people are having to pick up the slack. They're starting to do things to cover up the mistakes being made by this other individual. Now, the CFO has, you know, a lot of emotion tied up. They've known that person for a long time. There's loyalty associated. That person's probably supported them on their journey and vice versa. But they're starting to hear from their team that things are not as they should be. In that situation, the CFO has to make a decision. How do I deal with this? How do I have a conversation with that member of my leadership team that they are not working as effectively? Do I simply take them out for lunch and have that conversation? Do I get somebody else to have that conversation? Do I just leave it and hope that it sorts itself out? Leaving it and sorting itself out sends messages to the rest of the team. Oh, he's not being very effective. He's aware there's a problem. He's aware others are picking up the slack, but he's leaving it alone. He's allowing it to become a bigger problem. Okay, maybe then I can take my foot off the accelerator because I'm finding things a bit tough at the moment. It's okay because he's not going to do anything about it because the evidence he or she has demonstrated is they just leave things to fester. When you have that awareness of things not being right, things need to be addressed and they need to be addressed quickly, that is when you're putting yourself in that position to be able to take action that doesn't then have the ripple effect onto the rest of the team. But if you're spending your time thinking, well, we've worked really well together. I've known them for years. They helped me when I had a difficult time, you know, in my career. They've given me sound advice. I don't really want to upset them. Well, what you're doing then is exposing that problem to a wider audience and that problem then getting bigger. So when you have the awareness to work out, well, actually in this situation, I can try to understand what is going on with the person in my leadership team. I can advise them. I can get them to speak to HR. I can work out what the problem is. Do they need more training? Have they heard rumors about redundancy and they're concerned that their head may be on the block? I can understand what that problem is and I can at source deal with it. Or I can be worried about what are they going to think about me and is it going to impact our friendship? And not impacting our friendship is probably going to impact our organization, and then weighing up which is the most important piece in this equation. Because when it comes down to it, it is about understanding the wider context, understanding what is going on for that team member, what can be done about it, and how you can stop it being a wider problem if you just leave it.
And in terms of, I guess, not putting off decisions, because that can sometimes be a natural reaction, can't it, to a difficult decision. Well, I'll just leave that and see what happens. Like, how do we get over that almost decision
paralysis?
Yeah, exactly. How do we stop ourselves from not making decisions because they're scary or they could be big? You know, what are some of the things we need to think about?
Yeah. And that is a big problem I'm seeing currently in a number of organizations. It's that kicking the can down the road. It's having three meetings where previously, you know, one meeting will do because there isn't the confidence there that we have all the data, that we understand the economic situation, that we're waiting for somebody else to make a decision, you know, upcoming budgets, etc., etc. When actually what you have to do is pull it back to the, what do we know? What has experience told us? How can we utilize our judgment in the best possible way to make that decision now and have confidence in that decision? Because decisions are not always something that cannot be changed. Very often they can be moved based on more data being received, but you have to move yourself forward. Because if you're kicking a can down the road, if you're hoping that things will change based on somebody else, something else making a decision or a situation changing, then you're allowing things to escalate behind you and you're not dealing with that massive, you know, that tsunami that is coming because you're hoping you'll find higher ground before the tsunami reaches you. And it is a case of understanding what is the decision that we have to make, what is the information that we need, and what does our experience tell us with regards to what we've learned about this situation previously and how we can then utilize that to move ourselves forward. Because we all know, usually kicking a can down the road, that day will come where we have to take action. And usually when we take action, there is a sense of, I wish I had done that sooner, because actually things feel clearer now. I have more clarity. I understand what I need to monitor. We all understand the roles we need to perform, and now we can move forward rather than simply let's revisit this next week. Let's come back to it when we know more about X. Because usually we know what decision we need to make. We're just hoping to have even more information in order to reinforce our confidence, our sense of financial self-trust that we have made the right decision.
So how do we know whether we've got enough information to make a good decision? Because, you know, there is that piece about it's a confidence piece. You know, how do we improve our ability to judge whether we've got enough information?
Yeah. So judgment obviously is very subjective. And judgment is usually based on looking in the rear view mirror. When I've had to make this decision before, how good a decision have I made? How much information did I need? Who did I actually need to involve? How often did I get it right versus how often did I get it wrong? When I got it wrong, what did I learn from it? When I got it right, what can I learn from that and implement again going forward? So it is a case of building up that evidence stack around how and when have I come to the right decision, but also having that awareness of what is stopping me, what absolutely is stopping me from making that decision now. What is it is holding me back and saying, I need more data. We need more meetings. I need that extra conversation. What is that based on? Is it based on genuinely needing more information, or is it based on needing more assurance and reassurance that you are making a good decision? And usually, when we are backed into a corner where we have to say go or stop, all of a sudden we have the clarity we need. When we are in a crisis moment where a clear decision is required, usually our need to feel reassured, our need to be liked or to be seen as being whatever we need to be seen as, flies out the window and we move into action. And we need to be aware of, when is it that I hold back and what am I looking for when I'm holding back versus what I need to do when I am absolutely expected and have to make a decision. Because it's in those moments that is the most telling with regards to my judgment is based on me needing to have this criteria satisfied. when I am backed into a situation because of economics, because of whatever might be going on, and I clearly say, we're doing it this way, that is when I have clarity, because all of a sudden, I'm not worried about what others think about me. I'm not worried about the historical relationship I have with somebody. Or I'm not worried about if that decision, if I don't have all the information, I am just going to go with what I know now, and I'm going to make that decision knowing I'm making it with the best judgment I possibly have at that point in time. Because that's all we have going for us, is the information available at that point in time and the experience that we have to get to that point in time.
So how do we create that clarity and decision-making capability when we haven't got our backs against the wall? Because, you know, what is it that we need to think about so we can make better decisions faster?
Yeah. And I think it comes down to being aware of, when have I made really, really good decisions? What have I needed in order to make a really good decision? You know, as a finance director, as an FCO, you have to be able to rely on having the right people around you to help you to create that picture of the information that you have and any gaps there might be in order for you to make that right decision. So if you are looking for the next round of funding for your organization, thinking back to our last round of funding, what were the pieces that we had in place? What allowed us to be successful in creating the deck of information that was needed to convince backers to give us that next round of funding? What were the gaps? Where did we feel uncomfortable? Where was it we weren't actually able to put our finger on the point where we felt somebody else would invest in us? So it's taking that outside of view and looking in of what would I need or what would they need in order to make the decision I am about to make. So it's about looking at all the different parts of what is in front of you, being able to understand, well, are there gaps that I can see there that can be filled? Recognizing that the best finance directors don't do this alone. They run things by other people. Now, I know there's a tendency these days for people to run things by ChatGPT, Claude, etc. And whilst AI absolutely has its place in all of this, nothing beats having conversations with your team if there are gaps that need to be filled and being really honest. Because very often when we are, you know, in a leadership role, we have a tendency to think, well, I should have all the answers. I should know all of this. I don't want to expose a gap that I don't know this particular piece of information. Well, there we go. That's emotion, getting involved. The shoulds around, I should know. Why should you know if you haven't had a need for that particular piece of information before? You might have had a light bulb moment that says, well, actually, I remember the last time we did this, this was missing. So actually, I'm going to go out now and I'm going to ask for that particular piece of work to be done now, and not feeling exposed because you don't know it all. And that ties directly back to fear of getting it wrong, going back usually to a childhood experience. Because, you know, when we're in primary school, when we're in the first few years of primary school, you know, we'll be putting our hands up all the time, miss, I know the answer. And if you get it wrong, you're okay about it, you got it wrong. But if you keep putting your hand up and your teacher keeps saying, be quiet, give somebody else a turn, then you start to develop, it's not a good idea to ask questions, I'm going to be told off. People are going to laugh at me because I'm asking so many questions. And we can carry that feeling through, then when we are leading a team, when we're heading an organization, we can start to lean back into that young person we were, wanting to ask a question and feeling, well, actually, I should know that now. I'm at this senior position in my organization. I should know that, rather than going, well, actually, I don't know it. So I'm going to go and ask that person, where can I find that piece of information? What do we need to do to plug that gap? And allow that person to come forward and say, well, actually, I've been working on that. And this is the information I have based on the research that I've done. And that gap is plugged. So it's having that awareness of what is needed, learning from that experience, but not feeling as though you have to know it all. But all you can do is base your decision on what is in front of you, because sadly, none of us have a crystal ball.
And in terms of how others make decisions, because obviously we talked about involving other people in the decision-making process and or maybe evaluating other people's decisions, what questions can we ask them to uncover, I guess, how much of their decision was based on rational versus emotional thinking?
And I think it's just that, it's having that conversation, it's understanding. So you've come up with this particular piece of information, or you've come up with how you believe things should be done. Why? What evidence do you have? What is the research? Why are you putting that forward as the best way to approach this? You know, I remember when I was starting my senior leadership journey, many years ago, I'm having a graduate coming to me who had a brilliant idea about something that we were working on as a project. And I can remember my very first instinct when they put their idea forward was, well, why didn't I come up with that? You know, they're just a graduate. I should have thought of that before they did. And then I actually stopped and thought, brilliant. I've got somebody in my team who is prepared to come forward, who is prepared to say, actually, I think this might be a better way to do it, and lean into the wider cooperation and the wider learning that you can have, rather than feeling threatened because you hadn't come up with that idea. The fact that you have created an environment, because this is something very often that when we get into senior roles that we forget. We want to create an environment where our people feel confident to come to us and to actually say, I've thought of an idea. I've got a way that's going to save us money. It's going to save us time. It's going to make us more efficient. It's going to make us more effective. And if we don't create a culture and have a communication policy that allows people to come to us and openly share, there's a problem, there's a solution, there's a resolution, then all of that is going to be wasted in terms of positive collateral that we can take forward into the business. And with all the teams that I work with, understanding the culture that we have created around communication is really key to exposing something I call the hidden tax. Because if we are not careful, we can close down the best lines of revenue that we have in our business, which is our team's thoughts and experience and knowledge and ability to share. I don't know if I shared this story with you when we first spoke, Hannah. And it's a silly little story, but it's a great example. Many, many years ago, Vespa matches, or Vesta, so Swan Vesta matches, one of the employees came to the founder and said, I have discovered a way that you can save a fortune. And I will share with you what that is if you agree to give me, and it was something like 10% of what you save as a result of implementing what I'm going to tell you is a real money-saving idea. And the founder thought, well, I've got nothing to lose here. He can share this, his idea with me, and I'll either save money, less 10%, or I won't save money, and it won't cost me anything. So I might as well give it a go. So contracts were drawn up, and the employee shared his brilliant idea. His brilliant idea was just, up until that point, Swan Vesta matchboxes had the emery board on both sides of the boxes. He said, you don't need both on both sides. You just need it on one side. And that was it. That was the money-saving idea that saved Swan Vesta, back in the days, hundreds of thousands of pounds. And it cost the founder just 10% of his savings, of the savings made, and his ability to take on board the idea of somebody at the coalface, basically. So if we as senior leaders create a culture and environment in where we are prepared to listen to other ideas, to recognise that great ideas are not the domain only of ourselves, but our team, and encourage our team to share those ideas, that is when we create that culture where we can learn from each other and actually have each other's backs as well.
And when you're, I think everyone would agree that creating that kind of culture where people put forward, what are some of the things that we need to think about in terms of actually doing that? Because it sounds simple, but it's not.
No.
So how do we do that well?
Absolutely. Because it is not about writing a policy that says this is how we are going to behave in this particular situation. It's about being seen to do, to actually take the lead in the identity as that leader is. You encourage people to come to you and they don't feel a sense of trepidation or fear or worry about what are they going to think of me? What are they going to think of me as somebody going to the boss with my great idea? It could be whistleblowing. You know, it could be an income generating idea. It could be a whole host of things, but we need to be seen to be inviting people around the table and talking directly from the hip, saying, really important to me that the culture that we generate in our organization is one where people have an open door policy that me and all the other managers, people can come to you when they feel things aren't working, when they have an idea of how things can work better, when they have a concern that is worrying them. Because we all know that right now, productivity has never been so low. And part of that issue is people being concerned about their futures and being concerned about their financial futures. So if somebody has heard a rumor, redundancy could be in the offing, then they're going to have half a mind on their job and half a mind on getting their CV in order and looking elsewhere. Their productivity is going to reduce. They're not going to have their minds on the job. They're not going to be able to be as effective because they are concerned about what is going on for them personally. And I think just thinking of people who work for us as human resources, I think that does a real injustice to who they are as people. They are there to perform a role. They are there to do the job, but they are there to make money, to make their lives and the lives of their family better. And when we don't consider those things, that is when we start to lose the very people that we want to need to help an organization move forward. And that is why it is so important to consider how judgment gets affected under financial pressure, because there is no organization, hardly ever, that isn't under some kind of financial pressure. It could be what's going on in the world right now. It could be shareholders, you know, expecting a bigger dividend. It could be private equity backers breathing down, wanting a return on their investment. There's a whole restructuring going on, et cetera, et cetera. And unless we actually start to consider all the emotions that get involved, that drive those decisions, then that hidden tax, although it's not measured on our bottom line, it is actually being represented in a figure that is not as strong or not as solid as it could be, because all those things are compounding and eating away at that number on the spreadsheet.
So I'm very aware in terms of time, we're rapidly coming to the end of our time together. If you had to give people a framework for how they can make better decisions, what would that look like? And what are some of the things that people need to think about?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, I have a framework, and it's a five-part framework. It's called the five R's, basically. And first of all, it's about recognizing what is going on when it comes to, first of all, your own decision-making when you feel that financial pressure. So recognizing what comes into play for you when you are making financial decisions, but also recognizing what goes on for your wider team. Because as the FD, as a leader of a team, what is going on for us when we are under financial pressure is reflected onto our wider organization, our wider team. So being aware and recognizing how we are reflecting what is going on for us and the effect it is then having on our team. And then to register that. So that kind of goes into the bank of our experience, recognizing and then registering the effect that how you are behaving, how you are making decisions, how that is reflecting out into the wider organization. What is the cost to that? If you change that, what could be the benefit of changing it? And then the reveal part is the patterns. So what patterns are happening when you recognize how your behaviors are playing out onto the rest of your team? Do you see the team starting to shut down as you get more and more stressed and anxious about making a big decision? Do you recognize the pattern that your team is starting to get quieter and quieter? They're starting to back away. The language that they're using is almost waiting for you to make a decision, and then they'll back up that decision rather than them confidently speaking up, rather than waiting for you to pronounce how you think and feel about something. And then to actually look at what do we need to do to rebalance things in our team, our wider organization. How do we rebalance things so that people understand that how we all work together collectively plays a part ultimately in how effective the FD is with regards to the decisions that he or she needs to make? Because ultimately, they have to take, you know, everything that the leadership team is telling them, has researched for them, has provided for them in terms of, you know, board meeting notes, etc., etc. They have to make a decision. So when you rebalance things out in understanding what's been revealed, what is the rebalance that needs to go on in order for better decisions to be made going forward? And then to look at that in terms of the roots. So going forward, I want us to be stronger in our ability to come together, to actually be open in sharing our concerns, our ideas, our solutions, so that we are effective, we are coherent, and we are communicating in a way that is not based on our own emotion. And usually that emotion is one of fear, and it can be, you know, terrified fear or just a small feeling in the pit of your stomach that gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And once we understand, you know, those five elements, it actually puts us in a stronger position to be able to lead that team, but lead it through our actions and not just saying the right things when we are feeling calmer about things, when we are feeling we've got that clarity. Because clarity has to be available right through a process and not just at the very end. We need to be clear how we get to a point where we can make a decision, and that requires the steps being very, very clear, very, very process orientated, but recognizing emotion will come into it, but understanding, is that emotion helpful or is it hindering us?
And yeah, so that sounds like some really interesting steps. And I really like that last point about clarity of how you make a decision, not just almost clarity on the decision that's being made. So that is fascinating. Well, thank you so much, Leslie, for sharing your thoughts and insights today. If you want to learn more about you and your organization, where is the best place to find you?
So I'm always on LinkedIn, but also probably my website, because that has everything, all my contact details, social media handles, etc. So that's the moneyconfidenceacademy.com.
Brilliant. And of course, to our listeners, we will, of course, share those links in the show notes as part of this episode release. So thank you so much, Leslie, for joining me today. And thank you to our listeners. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then please, of course, do reach out to me or leave us a review. That helps us know which topics are resonating with you guys. So always love your thoughts. So thank you so much to Leslie, and we'll see you next time on the CFO 4.0 podcast.
Hey Google, what's the best accounting software for my business? Give it a couple of years, and I bet you she'll be able to answer you pretty accurately. But for now, it's still one of the few questions Google can't give you an answer for. But we can. Take our free quiz and find out which Sage product is the right fit for your business. Just head to itasksolutions.co.uk.